Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Capital Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Morning there, Mark.
Morning, Francis.
How are you today?
Very well.
Our guest later in this show is going to be, we have Kevin Zraley joining us. Kevin Zraley is author of the best-selling wine book in the world. It's a wine primer that we use to train all of our staff and all the classes, the consumer classes when we do a whole course. And it's, we recommend it to everyone. We actually have it on for sale in the restaurant.
He's been on the show before, but today he's got a new book out, and he's going to talk about the wines from all around the country.
And the first book is the Windows in the World Wine Course book. Tremendous. You can find out about it on our website. And his new book is specifically about American wines, and not just California wines and New York State wines and Washington and Oregon, but he has listed the wineries from all 50 states. And that's a unique thing that hasn't been done before. So we'll be talking with Kevin a little bit later. We want to talk about chefs who own multiple restaurants. We've had a number of them on our show. Thomas Keller is coming on shortly to talk with us about his restaurants in California and New York. And he has a couple, and he's opening a restaurant in Las Vegas. Mario Batali, who's went to college with us back in Rutgers in the day, mm-hmm. has many restaurants, and his restaurants are all great. And John George has a number of restaurants. There are some other restaurateurs, chefs who, I don't know, maybe aren't as successful, I think, in having the quality of food in all the different places, but they have restaurants around the country and around the world. And a lot of people are saying, are talking about the chef owners now, and Mark Bittman wrote an article in the New York Times.
I thought Mark was a little bit rough in this article, honestly, as far as that goes.
But we get a lot of feedback from our emails about people who say, well, they're not really the chef, they're not in the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I buy that. I think that people can do it well or poorly, but you can have a great executive chef in the restaurant doesn't necessarily cook, even if he's just in that one restaurant every night.
Well, one of the things that struck me in the very beginning of the Bittman article that just came out, and Mark Bittman's been on the show, and I respect a lot of the things he writes, but one of the things he wrote is, you know, back in the day, the chef would roam the dining room accepting compliments, explaining the scallops you enjoyed were flown in from Maine. Well, if he was in the dining room accepting compliments, you know what he wasn't doing?
He wasn't cooking.
Cooking for the table next to you.
Well, I don't. Also, I have to say that what we've always said is the mark of a great restaurant is that it should be no different on the chef nights, chef's mm-hmm. night off, and restaurants have
right.
to be
no
open.
No chef works 7 days a week in his restaurant.
Right.
No, you just physically can't do it.
And so I think that when a chef is a restaurateur who owns restaurants in multiple places and remains the executive chef of more than one venue, it's his responsibility to make sure that the quality of food is right on the money. And one of our listeners sent us an email who has a different opinion than we do. We've actually corresponded back and forth a few times. Very intelligent guy. And he said, listen, if they wanted to call themselves restaurateurs, I wouldn't mind it. Because mm-hmm. nobody expects Danny Meyer to be in Gramercy Tavern every night.
Right.
But they're not. They're calling themselves the chef. Now, here's where I quibble with that. And again, I think many people do this and fail. Many people have multiple places, and one or another place is not as good.
I totally agree. You see it all the time where somebody opens up a second restaurant, the first restaurant falls away, is all of a sudden not as good. Their second restaurant is never as good as their first restaurant was. We see that all the time. But at the same time, I do see a lot of these guys and a lot of these guys that Bittman writes about doing some spectacular things, even in multiple cities.
And I think where the difference between being the restaurateur like Danny Meyer, or like we are on a teeny tiny little scale mm-hmm. compared to Danny Meyer, but to be a restaurateur and have different places, like Danny Meyer has Tabla. Floyd Cardos is the executive chef of Tabla,
mm-hmm.
and he's doing Indian-inspired classical Western cuisine and doing it marvelously. That has nothing to do with
Gramercy Tavern
where right. Tom Colicchio is his partner and the executive chef there. And Danny Meyer is not going into the kitchen and saying, okay, change this dish that way. Okay, let me try that dish and make sure it's, you know, this doing perfect this way. No, I want to use a different ingredient here. That's not what he's doing as a restaurateur.
He might be doing it in the creation stage.
But I bet not. I bet he is looking to consult on the menu, and he certainly, as the owner, wants the input on the menu and what he wants to happen. But you know that Thomas Keller is intimately involved, though he has a chef de cuisine in New York and a chef de cuisine in California. He is the restaurateur, but he's also the executive chef.
Mm-hmm.
And he is making the decisions on the direction the menu is going to go, on suppliers. And he may not be making the individual decisions every day as to what the special is going to be tonight. But I think it's okay to have an executive chef or a chef restaurateur who has multiple locations. I think it's very hard to do.
Well, let's talk, and maybe some of our listeners don't know exactly the levels of chef that you might see in a kitchen. And the first one is an executive chef, and he would be your top guy. He's the creator. He's the person who sets the ship in a direction, and it goes that way. But then there's another guy that's usually underneath him in these multiple operations that's called the chef de cuisine. And that person, male or female, is supposed to be the person who takes the executive chef's vision and makes sure that everyone in the kitchen is executing it and makes sure that everything, that boat stays on track.
And
the
then
boat
on
stays on track now. The train stays on track.
What's the boat doing on the track? Get the boat off the track. And then there's the under the executive chef and then the chef de cuisine, if there is a chef de cuisine. Then you have multiple levels of sous chef. And if you have a very large kitchen, you'll start with an executive sous chef and then have sous chefs below him. Sous just means under. It's French word for under, and so we've adopted that word. And the sous chef is the person responsible for running an evening's service, and even some policies and procedures of the restaurant, like making sure the stuff gets ordered or making sure that the labor is in line on an ongoing basis. And it's very interesting how kitchens are structured like this, but I do think it's possible for the executive chef to not necessarily be on site.
Mm-hmm.
While it's also true that there are often executive chefs who are that in name only, and they're really just the restaurateur lending their famous name to the restaurant.
And you do see that, and you see it all the time. But, again, the part that I take issue with here is that you cannot be an executive chef in multiple places, and I just disagree with that. I think you can be the executive chef.
And I think you cannot
be the chef de cuisine
in multiple places. And I think the mark of it is, look, Thomas Keller is the chef at these two flagship restaurants are Per Se in New York and the French Laundry in Yountville, California.
Mm-hmm.
If the chef de cuisine at either place were to quit tomorrow, there would be a new chef de cuisine in place. And if you visited the restaurant next month, I don't think that you would see a sea change because the executive chef remains at the helm. And I think that's one of the reasons that they retain that title, when people do it well, of executive chef. And I think that what you have a right to expect in the dining room, no, you don't. I don't think you have a right to expect that Mario Batali or Thomas Keller is going to be at the door and come over to your table and say hello. That's not what they're promising you. What they're promising you is that you're going to have an awesome time and that the food is going to be great.
That you're going to have a Mario Batali-esque experience.
Exactly.
That the food is going to be on the level that you'd expect it to be at a Mario Batali restaurant. And that's different than a chain restaurant.
Absolutely.
Where everybody in the whole country is doing exactly the same thing.
And that Mario, for example, I mean, we use him as an example, has a vision for Lupa, one of his restaurants, or Esca, another one of his restaurants. And he can change chefs de cuisine there, and that vision will remain. And even though that chef de cuisine may go on to do other things, it's still Mario's vision of Lupa and that you'll see and that you'll eat. Hey, when we come back, we'll be talking with Thomas Keller, one of the top chefs in the country. Strike that, Alex. We won't be doing that. When we come back, and put this in its place, you ready? When we come back, we'll be talking with Kevin Zarelli. He's one of the top wine experts and wine educators in the country. He's written the best-selling wine book ever, and he's also an old friend, and he was instrumental in helping us get our start. So back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants. Our guest today is Kevin Zarelli. Kevin is the author of The Windows in the World Wine Course book, which you've heard us talk about so often on this show. It's the best-selling wine book in history. Kevin was wine director at Windows in the World from 1976 until the unfortunate events of 2001. At Windows, he built the largest restaurant wine cellar in the world. The Windows in the World Wine School he founded has instructed over 15,000 students, including many years ago. Well, moi. And his new book is Kevin Zarelli's American Wine Guide. So, Kevin, Is everything you do the biggest thing in the world?
You have to speak to my wife about that.
Oh.
I know this is a family show.
This is family radio, man.
Family radio.
Dear Lord.
No, actually, I've toned down. I mean, that's a very interesting question, by the way, because Windows on the World was the largest dollar volume restaurant in the United States. Now I have the wine school at the Marriott Hotel in Times Square. That's the largest Marriott in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The wine book, as you mentioned, there seems to be a lot of bigness going on. As a matter of fact, the new book is something totally different. It's almost like it's a little bigger than a pocket guide.
What?
I have big pockets, man. Not a problem.
Well, this is actually for big pockets, but the price is not. I think it's $12.95. So it's what it's supposed to do, and it's a work in progress, it's supposed to give you an idea. And remind everybody that America is a big wine producing nation, as well as big wine consuming nation. And for the first time in the history of the United States, all 50 states now produce wine. And I basically just go through each state and give a little bit of history, and I'm adding more as we go on.
You know, I thought the book was really very interesting, because in America we tend to focus on California, Washington State, Oregon, and maybe New York, but we don't realize that in all 50 states that Alaska has a winery. And I think the book is really valuable in sort of showing the breadth and the interest that we have in adopting wine into American culture. And I think for a long time you taught, and then I've taught courses based on initially how you structured your consumer classes and things that I've learned in my career. But one of the things we always start with is we say that, wine isn't a part of our culture like someone growing up in Burgundy has wine as their culture, and therefore we need a wine class. Do you think that this there being wine in all these states reflects us adopting wine into our culture more?
Absolutely. Wine consumption in the United States is the highest that it has ever been. And again, we're talking about a big country, Burgundy being a very, very small area, France really being a small country. When they talk about per capita consumption, actually the consumption of wine in France and Italy, as is going down, and the consumption of wine in the United States is just going up.
Yes, but their consumption of Big Macs is going up.
Yeah, you go to Champs-Élysées, and there's a McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
It's also the younger people are not taking from what their parents did or their grandparents did, that they're doing what American teenagers do, water, soda, beer, but wine is not as strong as part of the culture. Will it be a part of the American culture? Well, when you have all 50 states producing wine, then you have something called wine trails. And these people actually go, and this is their weekend, like people go to Napa Valley right now. Well, they can go to right here in the Hudson Valley where you're talking to me. They can go out to North Fork of Long Island. They can go down into Pennsylvania. Speaking of New Jersey guys, you talked about Alaska, but Jersey has over 30 wineries.
Yeah.
And then maybe it's Warren Hills, or maybe it's the Central Delaware Valley. But people are going to find these things, and that's how culture begins.
Yeah, Eric Asimov wrote this week in the Times a great article on the New York wines and the New York wineries and the longevity of those wines.
And he also gave a nice round diss to New Jersey wines, as I recall. Now, I have to say, I think that we touch upon an important thing and something that you can use the book for. I think that, Long Island wineries started as nicer places to visit than places to get wine to drink from. But, that you got to start somewhere sort of philosophy of things. I mean, do you think that's a way that wine culture or wine producing regions are starting with the destination tourist place, and then maybe they can sort of get a leg up to invest into a higher quality wine?
Well, the South Fork was, the place to go. That's still the destination. The North Fork was just potato farms, country. So nobody was going out there for. As a matter of fact, there's still a lack of hotels. That's the problem when you go out to the North Fork. You actually end up staying on the South Fork,
mm-hmm.
and then shooting over to the North Fork of Long Island. This is what's happening throughout the world. I mean, I know my book is on American wines, but my wife just came back from Spain, and she was telling me about Rioja. Now, Rioja in Spain is sort of like an area that people don't think about going to, and you really didn't 10 years ago. But now what they've done is they put in unbelievable hotels and bed and breakfasts and great restaurants. Now it's become a destination. So, yes, that's exactly how it begins. You start with build the winery and they will come.
Well, and it's not that unlike back in the day when we would go to Napa and Sonoma. Most people would stay in Napa and occasionally take a day trip up to Sonoma.
Correct.
When we come back, we're going to be talking more with Kevin Zarelli. Kevin's new book is Kevin Zarelli's American Wine Guide. He details in it all the wineries in all 50 states. And so wherever you're listening to us on this podcast, if you're in the United States, even up in Alaska, there's a winery by you that you can check out in the book. We'll link that you to that book on our site, restaurantguysradio.com.
Well, if you're in Alaska, it might not be by you.
Like, it's in the state, though, we're sure. Back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Kathleen Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Kathleen showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission? To live up to the standards set by Kathleen Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Kathleen Lombardi. You see, Kathleen Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or KatherineLombardi.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Kathleen Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick. Our guest today is Kevin Zarelli, probably the preeminent wine educator, at least the wine educator of consumers in the world. His new book is Kevin Zarelli's American Wine Guide, and we're talking about wines that are American. That's M-E-R-I-C-A-N, American. Now, Kevin, With wineries in all 50 states, your guide is terrific in that it gives people an insight into where there are wineries where they might be living near one and not know one was there. But your book sort of studiously avoids rating the wineries. Are they that bad?
No, the great thing is putting out a book. The worst part is reading somebody's review of somebody who didn't like the book.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I was criticized for that by some writer, basically saying there are no ratings in the book. Well, bottom line is, that's me. 35 years into this business, you've never seen anything in print from me that rates any wine on any numerical scale or any rating of A, B, C, or anything. I've never done it. I'm not a critic.
Mm-hmm.
That's not my job. I leave that to the Wine Spectator, to the Wine Enthusiast, Wine and Spirits Magazine, to Robert Parker, all these other critics. They rate the wines. My thing is more, as an educator, is to just report of what's happening out there. The Socratic method of learning is you make the decision. Mm-hmm. You make the call. I'm just trying to show people what's out there. And I did taste, I would say, a lot of wines. Let's put it that way. I'm not going to put a number on it. And some were unbelievable, and some were I wouldn't recommend. Mm-hmm. But that's not my job.
You know, I think that is so rare in the wine world today, and I think that that you have studiously avoided that since we first met. And you're right, I've never heard you say, you know, this is a better wine than that. Wine's not a contest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, would you go into a museum and say, as you walk through the Prado, say, you know, I gave the Degas a 94, but the Velasquez I only gave an 89?
And the thing, especially in our job, in our field, is to match the person with the wine that they want. I frequently recommend wines that I don't personally like to drink to people who want that type of wine. That's our job.
Well, but I also think that, you know, in our job, that we have to say, buy this, buy that. And, Kevin, and when you run a wine cellar, you do the same thing. But in writing a book, I think it's great that you just report. Hey, listen, we have to take a quick break for the news. We'll come back and talk more with Kevin Zarelli. His very famous book, the best-selling wine book in history, is the Windows in the World Wine Course book, which you can find at our website, as always, restaurantguysradio.com. And his new book is Kevin Zarelli's American Wine Guide about the wines in, well, the other states. We'll be back in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Today our guest is Kevin Zarelli. Kevin's an old friend, actually, and he's also the author of the Windows in the World wine course book, best-selling wine book in history. He was wine director at Windows on the World, which at the time was the largest dollar volume grossing restaurant in the world with the biggest wine cellar in the world. His new book is Kevin Zarelli's American Wine Guide. Kevin, one of the things about your book that's so fascinating is it details wineries in all 50 states. Now, we're all used to experiencing world-class wines from Washington State, Oregon, California, and those of us around here know that Long Island makes some extraordinary wines, but while you don't rate wines in particular, where are you seeing truly exceptional wines, like top quality wines from states that we might not expect?
Well, I'm going to start with my own state, New York, because the Finger Lakes District of New York, in my opinion, produces some of the best Riesling in the world. So it's not just an American thing. Well, who's producing the best American wine? I'm talking about world class wines. And then if you start going down into, and of course one of my mentors in my mind was Thomas Jefferson.
Uh-huh.
And you
guys didn't actually hang out.
You're old. You're not that old, man.
We used to hang out a little bit, but I can't talk about that either, you know, family show. But the whole thing of the state of Virginia, you know, we're talking over 100 wineries. In North Carolina, we're talking over 100 wineries. In Pennsylvania, you're talking over 100 wineries. Then you can shoot out to Texas. You can go to New Mexico. There are world class wines made in all the states that I just mentioned.
Can you name for us, just because we like to be concrete about things? Can you give me a name of a Finger Lakes Riesling or two that is just world class?
As a matter of fact, actually, I do that now. When I don't rate wines in the book. But what I do is I do give names of my favorites, you know, and of my favorite grape varieties, and then later on in the book you'll see something that I have there. So, first of all, the number one is going to be, on the Riesling basis, my favorite is Dr. Constantin Frank. And they make it into a dry style, they make it into a semi-dry style, and they also have sweet, very much like a German style wine.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the other ones that's mentioned there is Hermann Wiemer, who, again, obviously with the name Wiemer, German descent. In fact, when I first met him, he didn't speak English. So these are the two of the best, in my opinion, but there are at least 20 great producers of Riesling up there in the Finger Lakes.
So, Kevin, now every region, certainly in Europe, the idea is you grow different grapes in different regions based on climate and things like that. Are we doing some of that in the United States as well?
Well, again, that's why I said the Finger Lakes is not a place I'm going to go for really red wine. There's a couple of good red wine producers up there, but primarily white wine. It's cooler climate versus the North Fork of Long Island, which has got so many more degree days of and that's why it was always a great agricultural area. And they can produce a really good red wine. And that article you were speaking about, in yesterday's New York Times is Merlot.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. We've had on our show a couple times Barbara Shin and David Page from Home Vineyards
Home Restaurant Shin Vineyards.
They own Home Restaurant in Manhattan and Shin Vineyards out in Long Island.
Right.
And you know, it's funny. That was the only vineyard I've ever gotten to see from, because they're friends of ours, from the time it was a potato field to when they bought it,
right,
to planting the vines, to the early fruit, and then to making great wine. And it's really phenomenal out there. The Shin Vineyards Merlot is incredible.
Let me put my money where my mouth is.
Mm-hmm.
This week I planted, this is my fourth time around, planting my own vineyard.
Really?
Yeah, in the Hudson Valley. Finally I found the spot to do it in, with the soil, the drainage, and I'm also doing it organically. And I'm working with an organic farmer here. So I planted Cabernet Franc this week. I planted Chardonnay, Riesling, and Pinot Noir. I'll let you know in 5 years when we get together again for the show.
I love it.
The Restaurant Guy Show. I'll let you know what happened. But I'm doing an investment because I believe it can happen.
Well, how much have you planted?
It's an experimental thing. We're just talking about right now 250 vines, and next year I might make it 500 vines. I want to see what happens.
That's incredible.
And actually, I got the Riesling from Dr. Frank, and I got the Cabernet Franc from Schneider Vineyards, which is out there in Long Island, which is considered to be the best producer of Cabernet Franc.
So if this works out, will we see a Kevin Zarelli Cabernet Franc on the market?
Well, they say this. The guy that I'm doing it with, the farmer, his mm-hmm. name is Ray. So I said to him we should do like a Ben and Jerry's,
uh-huh.
you know, like Ray and Kevin.
Uh-huh.
You know, and do some hippie stuff on the side, you know, like on the, you know, the outside. And it's all organic, so hey, why not?
That's wild.
So I have no idea. I just love, I think no one has a right to be a writer about wine unless they have actually physically, I mean, I was so full of dirt this week, from head to toe, because you're not bending down, you're laying on the ground, because you got to go deep with the rootstocks. You can't write about something unless you've been there, unless you've dug the hole, put the vine in, watered it, watch it grow, you know, graft, which of course is done before, but pruning, pick the grapes, and make the wine.
Yeah, not for me, man.
That's why you're in the restaurant business. You like being in a nice, you know, 65-degree temperature, popping a cork, right?
Yeah, for 13 hours.
I'm going to tell you, Kevin, my dad owned a little farm up in upstate New York when I was a kid, and we used to go up on weekends, and my grandmother tended to it during the week, and it was hellacious. Okay, just back-breaking,
right. Oh,
tons of work,
right.
All year round, you know.
You know, it's funny. We got into the winter months, and just as the spring is about to happen, David and Barbara always talk to me. They're like, yeah, this is the hands and knees time of year, the pruning. Yep. I'm like, hands and knees? You know, it's funny. When people apply for the restaurant business, I don't know if you do this, because you were involved in restaurants for a long time as well. When people apply for restaurant business, I really like, there's certain things I look for in an application. If your parents or your uncle or your grandfather owned a business and you worked in it, you mm-hmm. know, that's a big plus for me. It shows me you're a hardworking person. But if you
work on... It shows me you know what it takes.
Some of our best employees, however, have on their resume that they worked on a farm for a summer or when they were a kid. And there is no more hardworking job than being a farmer.
Than shoveling out the barn.
Oh, man. So, across the 50 states, Kevin, one of the things that people tout from New Jersey that I actually, and I'll be honest with you, I've tasted through the New Jersey wines a number of times, and I don't really care for most of them. But, you know, I think that there's the potential for quality there, and we invest in our local places, and they're wonderful places to go and visit and drink the wine on site. It's sort of an adventure, and that sort of helps the winery to invest and know that there's a market there and to make better wine. But New Jersey, we have a lot of good fruit wines. Do you talk about, or do you care about, I know you don't talk in the book about, but do you care about fruit wines at all?
Well, when I say that there's a winery, that winery can be made from fruit. If I say, to be exact, for New Jersey, there's 33 wineries. Some of them are just fruit wineries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't mention...
Things like blueberry wines.
Yeah,
and things
of course,
like
rhubarb wine, mm-hmm. blueberry wine. I mean, this is stuff that's been going on for, you know, decades of people making, wine. So the problem with New Jersey is, and I agree with you, by the way, the potential is there. Have I found a world-class wine in Jersey yet? The answer is no. Could I? The answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
They do have, you know, like Chardonnay, Riesling, Pinot Noir, but they're still growing some hybrids.
Yeah.
I think that hybrids are good, but I've never had in my life what I would consider to be a world-class wine made from a hybrid grape.
Let me explain to people what that's all about. There are two kinds of wine. There's European, the native European wine, which is called Vitis vinifera, and there's Native American wine, which is called Vitis labrusca, which, you know, is very hearty but doesn't make very good wine. You can't make very good wine out of it. And what a number of producers do on the East Coast, especially where it's very difficult, is they'll cross the European vines and the American vines and make hybrid grapes, which give you some of the flavor of the European Vitis vinifera and have the hardiness of the Vitis labrusca, and that's what you see a lot out here in New York and in New Jersey. And those wines never really do come up to be...
They don't. They're not in the same class,
top
I think.
Quality.
You'll find that also in Ohio, and you'll find that in Michigan. You'll find that in Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just hedging their bets against the cold temperature. But in today's world right now, and again, what you just saw, I planted all vinifera, all European vines. I'm not worried about the cold temperature. You know, we talk about global warming, and the reality is you can see it in the vineyards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the
few upsides to global warming. Hey, Kevin, we need to take a quick break.
Sure.
We'll come right back after these messages. Our guest is Kevin Zraeli, whose new book is Kevin Zraeli's American Wine Guide. Probably the best wine primer in the world is the Windows in the World Wine Course book. You can find out more about it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Back in just a minute. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply Company is the oldest dealership in New Jersey. They've been equipping and supplying restaurants since 1932, and they know that to make great food, you need great equipment. You need equipment that doesn't break down, and you can't pay too much for it. Whether you need an emergency replacement or a wholesale kitchen renovation, Economy's knowledge, experience, and integrity are indispensable. Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply is a recognized dealer for all major brands, and they specialize in custom fabrication and ventilation. At Economy, they've got all the tools you need to get the job done, all in one place, all priced right, and delivered to your door. Economy is the only dealer in New Jersey that's an approved for on-site demonstrations of the Rational Combi Oven. The Rational Combi Oven is an innovative combination of convection and adjustable steam oven. It's a powerful and versatile tool in your kitchen's arsenal. They also supply competitively priced paper products and all the non-food supplies every restaurant needs. You can visit the Economy Demo Kitchen on Broad Street in Clifton, New Jersey. You can also visit economysupply.com, then call them at 973-279-5500. That's 973-279-5500. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants. We're having a conversation about American wine with Kevin Zraeli. He's written a book, a new book, called Kevin Zraeli's American Wine Guide. We were talking about the difference before the break between American, Native American wines and European wines and how many people grow hybrids in various states of the Union. But the traditional vitis vinifera, European wines, are grapes that you'd know, like Chardonnay or Cabernet Sauvignon or Riesling or Zinfandel or Chenin Blanc. And that seems to be where the best wine is coming from. And you were saying before the break, Kevin, that, you know, with global warming, we're finding that we're more able to grow European stock like vitis vinifera in more places. And did I catch that right?
That's part one. Part two is, not to get too scientific here right now, understanding what clones, and there are hundreds of different clones for, you know, every grape. They've learned, you know, what clone can actually grow in what soil, in what climatic condition. This kind of information did not exist 50 years ago. It really didn't even exist 20 years ago to what it does today. So if somebody's listening out there and said, well, I tried to do a vineyard, like me, my first vineyard was 74, and I told you I've failed three times so far. But I'm going into this one saying, I know it will work.
Mm-hmm.
Because of just, if you get the right rootstocks, and you we just went to the, you know, Cornell University Extension, and they do your soil samples and all that other kind of stuff. It's a great farming of, and it can be fun.
So, Kevin, if there's an upside in the Finger Lakes that now we, you know, global warming is causing us to have, be able to grow some things that we weren't able to grow, is there a downside someplace else in the world?
In the vineyard world,
obviously, yeah. There's lots of downsides.
Well, you know, you hear about all the high alcohol wines that are coming out of California. I mean, how far can they go? I mean, mm-hmm. It's a very big controversy right now. You know, when you're hitting 14.5 or 15.5, even 16% alcohol.
Let me explain for our listeners what it is we're talking about. As it gets warmer, the warmer a place is, the better it is for a grape and the more sugar you can produce in that grape. And since the way we get alcohol out of grapes is we ferment that sugar to make alcohol, as we get in warmer and warmer climates, the alcohol content goes up and up. And that may not necessarily be a good thing.
Well, alcohol can ruin the balance of a wine. Basically, what I'm looking for is fruit, and I want the fruit in the smell. I want the fruit in the total picture of the taste and beyond. If alcohol can overpower it, and then you add oak to that, and you can overpower everything. But that's the big controversy in the wine business right now. They're even saying there's more elegance in a Merlot from Long Island than there is in a Merlot from California.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a confluence of rising temperatures and a simplification of taste. I mean, there is certainly something appealing about something that's powerful and has a good alcoholic bite and has a lot of oak to it.
Well, and it may have flavors that you recognize, and people enjoy sometimes just being able to recognize the things in their wine.
And sometimes to appreciate grace, you maybe need to bring a little bit to the table and look for a little bit of subtlety and nuance, but it's not all always about power, and maybe as we look at some of the cooler climate places in the United States, we can find better and more interesting wines. Is that an accurate assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, when you're talking about, even though Washington State, you think about it being so far north, it's, you know, there's desert up there,
right?
In some of the areas. Or Oregon now is a cooler climate coming through, and everything's around Portland anyhow. The winery is Pinot Noir, lighter style. And the one thing I wanted to say, because this is not, you call it the restaurant guys, not, you don't call it the wine guys, but I'm sure you could if you wanted to.
Sometimes.
But the whole idea of restaurant wine, what do you serve? I've always said I cannot believe that chefs work 8, 10, 12 hours a day preparing something unbelievable, putting the right ingredients in the kitchen, and then they allow it to go out to a table and allow somebody else, meaning a waiter or a manager, put another ingredient there, which is the wine.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you take something light and delicate and you put it up against a big, full-bodied, high-alcoholic wine, fruit bomb, as they're sometimes called, it destroys everything that the chef did.
Well, just like an out-of-balance wine or an inappropriate wine can throw the food out of balance.
Correct.
Now, do you think that in the state of restaurants, because you're one of the top wine educators in the country for both consumers and staffs, do you think that there's an increasing level of people on the floor of restaurants who really know what they're talking about? Or do you think we're in the a little knowledge is a dangerous thing stage of American sommeliers?
I think if you take a look at it right now, compare it to 30 years ago, and the level is unbelievable, unbelievably better. There was nothing 30 years ago, and all people talked about was how to make a martini or a Manhattan or an old-fashioned. And today, you better be able to understand wine because, I don't know if you remember this, but I'm actually still where I work with Smith & Wolensky.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're talking Smith & Wolensky, this is public knowledge, I mean, $35 million in wine sales.
Yep.
Around the country and all of the restaurants that they have. This is a business, $35 million. You better make sure, you know, you got it correct. And the interesting thing about Smith & Wolensky's, by the way, they're all American wines.
Yeah, that was the great, they call it, what do they call it, the Great American Wine List?
Yes.
And, you know,
the Great American Steakhouse, I'm not, you know, I'm just out there, that's their, the way they do it, the Great American Steakhouse with the Great American Wine List.
That's
800 wines in New York City at the one on 49th and 3rd. 800 different American wines, and they're not all from California.
And it's your job to make sure that not only the wines are there, but there are enough people on hand who know enough about them to guide you to the right choice?
That's part of the reason that I wrote the book. You know, I can't get to every Smith & Wolensky restaurant throughout the country, so, boom, we'll write a book, we'll get them copies of it, and they'll start learning, and then we can educate them and keep them going.
We'll come back in just a moment. Our guest is Kevin Zarelli. He's author of the Winners in the World Wine Course book and now Kevin Zarelli's American Wine Guide. We're talking with him about the state of wine and service in wine and restaurants in America. Back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1155. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. Our guest today is Kevin Zarelli. He's author of the Winners in the World Wine Course book. He's very important to the formation of our career. We learned a lot about wine from Kevin early on and have used his book still to educate our own staff. And in our consumer tastings, we use it as well. We sold over like 700 of those.
Kevin, you may not realize that every single staff member, when they get employed at our place, is issued your book when they begin. And every time we teach our wine course, we use your book as the primer.
Yeah, it's the primer, man.
My wife thanks you. My four children thank you. My dog.
Put one of those kids into
well fed.
I put one of those kids in a Montessori school. Hey, now the American Wine Guide is not just a listing of American wineries, but you talk a little about the history. What sort of new ground did you cover in talking about the history of American wines in this book?
Well, it was fascinating going back. I mean, if you go back to the Pilgrims and they came over here and they couldn't grow the grapes because of the weather, and then they started using the Native American vines and they didn't like the taste. So what happened is the country became into beer and into distilled spirits. And then, I mean, people like William Penn back in Pennsylvania in 1683. I was a history major, you know, planted grapes. Obviously, Thomas Jefferson planted grapes. You know, the French Huguenots down in Jacksonville, Florida in 1562. I mean, this is not a new industry. What's happened is from those old days and 400 years of failure is now all 50 states produce wine. It took that long to get us to this level, to the high quality.
That's amazing.
So it's not something that's brand new here, even though California, you know, everybody knows about it now.
And you can read about that and then practical applications and places to visit wineries in your local area. And we always talk about eating locally. I think you should try and drink locally as well. And you can learn how to do that in Kevin Zarelli's book, Kevin Zarelli's American Wine Guide. Kevin, thanks for coming on the show.
Gentlemen, until we speak again.
Au revoir, les enfants.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Kevin.
Was that French?
Yeah, I think okay. So. I don't know what it means, though. I just, Mark taught me I'm like a monkey. I come back with it. So I hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. You can find out about Kevin's book and Kevin's classes on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. You can also find out about, well, our staff is trained by Kevin's book, and the classes that we teach at restaurantguysradio.com or stageleft.com. Hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to us babble on about wine with our friend Kevin Zarelli. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.